Hello, everyone. Welcome again to the Startup Societies Foundation podcast. Today, we're joined by the founders of MooIPoo. Today, joined by Nigel, the project director, and Tay, the architect. How are you guys doing today?
Very good, thank you.
Yeah, great.
Lovely to be here.
Oh, fantastic. Likewise. So let's get started, broad strokes. What was your inspiration for a startup city project like this?
That's pretty straightforward. The inspiration is actually not ours. It's the Karen people in Karen State in Burma. They're the real drivers of this.
Excellent. And can you tell me a little bit about these people and their location and their history?
Sure. So the Karen, going back maybe 1,000 years, are actually descended from the Mongol tribes. They would have migrated down off the Tibetan Plateau some 700 to 1,000 years ago and have occupied the countryside known as Karen State for equally as long a time. In that respect, while they are part of the country of Burma or Myanmar, as it's sometimes referred to, they are ethnically different to the actual Burmese people. And Burma as a country has quite a number of different ethnic groups. You and your listeners may also be aware that there has essentially been a civil war there for the last 65 years. So in that respect, the Karen have have been sort of fiercely independent, protecting their own rights and interests in their own landscape, and as such have essentially maintained a guerrilla war with the central government for almost 70 years now. The area that we're working in is essentially along the Thai border. Between Thailand, the Thai border and the Burmese border there is the Mowi River. And between the Mowi River and, the capital, Yangon of Burma, is quite a large mountain range. So we're talking about a very hilly, mountainous area. And the area where MooIPoo is located is in a more sort of fertile valley directly between the sort of mountain range and the river. So you have a natural geographical boundary, both with Thailand and also with, the broader state, Burma itself as a country through the mountainous terrain. So you've got two geographical boundaries there, barriers to, development, I guess. And as such, the area is still fairly pristine. It's very mountainous, but you also have an abundance of wildlife still present in the area, tigers, elephant, black bear, other sort of iconic Asian species. So in that respect, the Karen were originally seeking independence from Burma, but about 15, 20 years ago, they changed tact and sought for autonomy, true autonomy under a true federal system. So we're working with the KNU, the Karen National Union, and essentially the KNU is almost a government in exile. They obviously have their own government outposts because KNU is a political organization. They also have the KNLA, the Karen National Liberation Army, and the Karen National Defense Organization as their two military units. But we're dealing with the political organization. So in that respect, the KNU have control over a certain amount of landscape, and they have had that for many years. They issue leases, they issue mining, exploration permits, forestry concessions, etc. They also have obviously a direct relationship with the Burmese government in that there is obviously they're part of a broader peace process now. There was a nationwide ceasefire. Then there was the elections where Aung San Suu Kyi's government has come to power. And there's been a process sort of unfolding there.
Okay. So one thing listeners or potential investors might think about when they're thinking about this location is how are you going to assert sovereignty, or better yet, tell investors that it will be sovereign or sovereignty will be protected and that the Burmese government will not return to assert their authority over the area?
Sure. Look, I genuinely think that those days of the military now exerting their authority are over. It's 2017 now. A lot of the generals are getting very, very old. Similarly, the KNU leadership, many of them are in their 80s and 90s. So you have to look at it in that context, that the people that started the Civil War, many of them have still been hanging on to power. And essentially they're aging and they're dropping off one by one. As that cohort changes and it drops down to the younger generation, people are looking for different opportunities. They're looking for economic opportunities. There is no advantage in maintaining the civil war economically. You know, Thailand is becoming it's a very, very fast developing nation. You've got high-speed internet, you've got, you know, all the mod cons that you want. So in that respect, you know, that's what's sort of driving it. Plus, there has been a commitment from the KNU to the various peace processes that have occurred. There is communication with government. There are things like there's a one particular coal mine where an operational, you know, mining permit was issued, and it was issued by the KNU, but was supported by the Burmese military specifically, because both parties were able to receive royalties from it. So where there is a economic interests, the parties will collaborate, right? And where there have been disputes, they will obviously, you know, continue to historically fight. And now it's negotiate. So, you know, obviously we do have some inside information, and that information, you know, tells us that people are getting down to business. That's what's the main driver now, is economic interest. For the older generation, it's about legacy. For the younger generation, people are obviously in their 40s and 50s, it's more about, you know, setting up the economy for the future.
Well, going off of that vein into economics, one of the features you mentioned about this area is that it has a lot of geographic barriers, potentially harming trade or making making trade more costly. How do you overcome that barrier, seeing that many startup societies thrive based on their proximity to markets?
Yeah. Look, so the reason why the KNU and the Karen have been successful in their guerrilla warfare was because of the topography of the landscape. Because they had a vast tract of land between a mountain range and the Thai border. Thailand has already built the infrastructure. That is the key to the success of Muay Phu. Is we have a four-lane highway that runs essentially parallel to the border, that is only less than a kilometer away from the actual border.
And there's a huge bridge that connects across the river from the Thai town called Mae Sot, which is one of the major towns on the Thai side. So the connection between this area that we are talking about and the Thai city is extremely good.
Yeah. Plus, they're building, it's under construction at the moment, an international airport in Mae Sot. So you'll be able to direct fly from various locations, I suspect, in Asia to start into Mae Sot. So now I have to fly from Singapore to Bangkok and then a 45-minute flight from Bangkok to Mae Sot. Soon, in 1 or 2 years, I'll be able to fly from Singapore direct to Mae Sot.
Interesting. And going off the vein of infrastructure, what is your plan for implementing infrastructure in Muay Phu?
One of the major advantages of this area is water supply is excellent, but it needs treatment and storage and reticulation. So that's one issue solved. Energy is going to be another big issue, which we think that for the immediate future, we'll be using a lot of wind power and also solar power. Of course, there will also be diesel generation for the intermediate situation. But these are the two main things. Telecommunications, I think, will be a very important part. And I think here is where we can tap the Thai side.
Correct. So currently in certain patches, there is mobile reception from Thailand, there's no mobile coverage from the Burmese side. However, we have been in early discussions with, not with the telcos yet, but with technology providers who can essentially provide low-cost repeater services for the Thai telecoms. So we would actually build the infrastructure to basically repeat and extend the range into the Muay Pu township. And we simply do that by putting a mast up on the tallest peak above the city. If anyone has seen the website or seen our investor presentation, you'll notice that there's, you know, a series of high peaks directly behind the city. So that provides us with an extraordinary opportunity just to extend the range of the Thai telecom short term. Medium term, of course, we'd be interested in developing our own local telecommunication services.
From the Thai city of Mae Sot, Muay Pu is located across stretch of riverside plain, which means that Muay Pu will become virtually the center of this new development up and down the 300 kilometer stretch. River transportation is readily available right now, and people are actually using small boats to traverse up and down across to Thailand as well as up and down the 300 kilometers. Roads will of course have to be built along the linear stretch and eventually upgraded to highway status. Meanwhile, small tracks and so on will be sufficient for the immediate development.
So do you have a really engineer look when it comes to building this city? Are you sort of top down, or do you believe that you're going to give a lot of authority to the private builders to determine the infrastructure?
Yeah, first of all, there has to be a detailed study of the land situation, the soil conditions, the fertility of the land, the drainage flows, the flood conditions, and so on. All that will have to be done immediately. And then a master plan will be developed in consultation with all the various key stakeholders, the military, the local people, the potential investors, which are going to be mainly from the Thai side, because they are the ones looking at the expansion of business into this area. So some kind of collaborative arrangement will have to be involved in the planning process. Of course, we will be taking a lot of initiative in framing the key issues and guiding the discussion.
So in terms of investors, there's been a lot of problems with startup societies or even seasteads. For instance, Max Marty of Blue Seed had trouble raising funds from investors for his project because there's nothing very similar and there wasn't really much to assure of success. How are you able to assure investors that success is remotely likely? Or likely enough to invest?
Look, of course, is this high risk? Absolutely, right? I think the precedent that we need to focus on are things like the Chinese casinos on the Miawadi side of the border. So currently there's a series of casinos that have been developed on the Burmese side of the border across the water from Thailand, okay? Now, visitors in Thailand can go across to the casinos and can spend their money, buy duty free, etc., and don't require any passport control either side. So the precedent's been set. Now, of course, there's beneficiaries, royalties from the casinos flowing both ways to the Korean as well as to the Burmese. So in that respect, Muay Pu will be based upon the same model.
So do you plan to have a specialized niche like a lot of these gambling zones, like perhaps maybe a resort or something like that, a minimally viable product for your startup city?
Okay. So essentially the business model is that we take a 99-year lease over approximately 5,000 hectares of land. We master plan that land. Then we essentially enter into sublease with other enterprise developers to develop their enterprise in various pockets. Each of those leases will pay a royalty, you know, a annual fee or a or a monthly, probably both, an annual fee and some sort of service fee for the provision of services. So that essentially is the model. The KNU have been issuing leases for the area, and the leases are legally defensible.
No, the other thing to add is the population dynamics. At the moment, there's a huge number of Karen refugees which are now ensconced on the Thai side in refugee camp encampments. And these people are longing to go back to their own country and therefore offer a huge human labor resource, which is going to be an important component in the industrialization and farming and various other economic activities, which will have to be start up in the Muai Poo area. Also, I understand that there are many Christian organizations that are helping these people and are also would also be keen to sponsor resettlement projects within the Muai Poo area for these people to move back. But however, the jobs and also farming and various other forms of livelihood will have to accompany that relocation process. So I think that will be one component that investors will be interested in, because there would be a very large labor resource availability.
Yeah,
that's an interesting point, a refugee city. There's been a lot of talk in the international community about creating more refugee cities. Have you thought about reaching out to them and asserting the sovereignty of the Karen people more aggressively by framing it as a refugee city?
Well, we don't really need to, because that's what's actually already happening, Joe. There's a community of about 300 there already, and these are people that have left the refugee camps and are now, you know, making a home for themselves at Muai Poo. Part of what we're doing is, rather than it become a sort of organically grown system or city that has its own inherent infrastructure and planning problems, we're trying to get ahead of the bus and actually provide that master planning service. And as Tay mentioned earlier, there's an arbitrage opportunity for, say, Thai manufacturers between Thailand and Burma. Thailand's become quite expensive, both in land costs as well as labor costs. And we have a ready workforce that just needs education and training, and the refugees. So the intent is to create some anchor investments within Muai Poo, manufacturing more likely, manufacturing, assembly, possibly textiles, etc. That would be the catalyst for people to leave the refugee camps on the basis of knowing that they were, you know, coming back into a community, but also that there would be jobs as well as arable land to grow crops, etc. So the system would be sustainable. Now, part of it, sustainability is a big key for us, as well as, you know, seeing this project as a way to implement the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. If we're going to attract these large manufacturers and other other potential industries, we want to make sure that we're able to manage the environmental impacts appropriately. And that's part of what we're intending to do.
No, the other thing is the natural environment, the mountainous terrain, and the existing forest area and wildlife actually offers a tremendous opportunity for ecotourism, which is highly accessible from the Thai side through Mae Sot. So I think that and also on the Karen leadership point of view, from their point of view, preservation of the ecosystem and the wildlife of that area is considered by them to be part of their heritage, which they want to preserve. So I think there's a mutual interest here between tourism and local sentiment.
Excellent. Well, we have to wrap up, but I like to give our guests an opportunity at the end of each podcast to give a forecast or an idealistic prediction of what they want to happen to their project within the next 5 years. So, you guys, if the best case scenario happens with Muai Poo, what do you think will happen?
Let me just very briefly describe the kind of spatial model that I have in mind for new humanized settlements of this kind. First of all, it has to be compact so that people are able to walk freely. It's a pedestrianized kind of environment where the emphasis is on community interaction and communication, and always surrounded by farms which produce the food and the sustenance for the city itself. Of course, walkability and vehicle transportation, all this must be planned from the beginning so that the conflicts are minimized. At the moment, most cities are planned without thinking about the pedestrian. I think the pedestrianized environment is absolutely crucial.
Excellent. All right, you guys. Well, thanks for coming on. Everyone who's listening, thank you again for joining us at the Startup Societies Foundation podcast. Come again next week for more great content. Thank you guys for joining us.
Okay.
Thanks Joe.
Thanks.